All right, hi everybody, and welcome to Lecture 24 in this Ancient History program of History at Our House for the elementary class. We are returning to Egyptian history here, but we are not going to be spending much more time on it because archaic Egypt, which produced the pyramids around 2500 BC, which we have illustrated now in this timeline that I will be distributing to you guys as soon as I can. Okay, we have the peak of ancient Egypt in the age of the pyramids, right? That continued to be what Egypt was like until the reign of Pepi II. So we have Pepi II here around 2200 BC, and we have him shown on his mother's lap, because he was a child pharaoh. And then he went on to live for 90-some years. So he was also a frail old pharaoh. And during his early life and during his old age, certainly, in both cases, the kingdom really would have been ruled by other people. So the idea of the god king, of the god pharaoh, certainly would not have been a reality at that time. And so, not surprisingly, Egypt fell apart. And so it fell into a civil war between Upper and Lower Egypt. There were two viziers, and then there were the lords that we call nomarchs, and eventually it just fell apart. And until we have finally it was put back together again by a pharaoh called Mentuhotep II. But what we talked about yesterday was, it was a new kind of Egypt. So this right here is what anybody in modern times looking back at Egypt is really the heart of Egypt, is really the thing that represents Egyptian culture more than anything else, and we've already seen it. It has come and gone. So I'm sorry if there's sound problems, but I'm sure it will also come and go. So, after Pepi II, it breaks apart, and then it comes back with Mentuhotep II, but it's a new kind of Egypt. Nowhere near as interesting from our perspective way over here in 2015-16. The pharaohs do not make these fascinating colossal tombs anymore. They make more hidden tombs. These were called... This is a new design that we call rock-cut tombs. Rock-cut tombs. Because, right, it's cut out of the rock. It's not built up in the middle of the flat desert. It's more hidden, nestled inside of this mountain here. And so it's a very different style. And that's because the whole idea of a god-king had died. I think it is fair to say that the whole idea of a god king had died, especially because Mentuhotep II was not a god king, even in his own mind, right? He was a vizier. How did he become the pharaoh, the supposed kind of god king in Egyptian culture? He became the pharaoh by violence, by force, by intrigue, by killing other people and so on. And he knew that. He knew all about the ins and outs of the life of a pharaoh and the way that Egypt really worked. So, you know, I don't think he had any illusions or could pretend to himself that anything was other than it really is. So this idea of the god king really did not survive the crumbling of Egypt. We're still going to have pharaohs for the rest of Egyptian history. And we're going to look at a little bit more of Egyptian history. Today's topic is later Egyptian history. We'll spend maybe another couple classes on this, and that's about it. Because basically, we don't have the same kind of people anymore. And the kind of people that we're going to see, as it turns out, are quite a bit less interesting. I mean, I don't admire the Egyptians very much for what they did. Because we talk about Egypt as being right. When we talk about a culture that we admire, we call it classical, right? When we have a culture that we look back at and, well, it's kind of fascinating, but we don't think that they necessarily did anything wonderful. What do we call that again? What's the difference between the two different kinds of ancient history? We have classical, and then we have, Patrick?
Archaic,
very good. Okay, so yeah, this is an archaic culture. It's not one that there's all that much to admire about. And so we have the pyramids, and wow, they are impressive. But after that, it gets to be less interesting. So we won't have too much more time to spend on the Egyptians. Here's an interesting fact about the Egyptians after this time, which is kind of a sad reflection of how things had changed and how much less interesting Egypt was becoming. Now, some people will, anybody here who's probably read about Egyptian history may have some notion, based on kind of children's history books, of why the Egyptians stopped building pyramids. Does anybody have a kind of, their own idea, or has done some reading perhaps that to reveal why the Egyptians stopped building the pyramids? I know that we have this version of it that I'm kind of presenting to you here a little bit. But there is a kind of more, I don't know what the right word is, more usual kind of explanation, I guess you would say, as to why they stopped building pyramids. Rosetta, do you have some notion of that usual explanation? Go ahead.
Well, lots of tombs would be they would be basically ransacked and stolen.
Okay, right? They would be raided, right? We have this expression, tomb raiding, right? And that everything inside would be stolen, right? Because the pharaohs were buried with gold and jewels and all kinds of amazing things. And so a lot of valuables, right? And so things would be raided. Okay, so that is definitely a part of the answer why. But here is the sad truth about tomb raiding. It is the answer to the question, who did that? Who did the tomb raiding? And now this will tell you everything you need to know about Egyptian culture after the age of the pyramids, and probably why the age of the pyramids came to an end in the first place. Who did the tomb raiding? Was it some kind of character like Indiana Jones from the movies? I don't know if you guys know those movies yet, or those kinds of things, right? Where you see this modern day archaeologist who's going in, or there's that Lara Croft Tomb Raider series of movies as well. Not really good for younger kids, but, kind of modern characters who go in and who sneak in, who get the artifacts in the tomb. That might be the notion that people have of tomb raiders. But here's what actually happened, and that tells us a lot about what was happening in Egypt. Who raided the tombs of the pharaohs? Are you ready for the answer? The pharaohs. The pharaohs. So, what do I mean by that? That's not the question. So, what do I mean by that? That's a different question. So, Rosetta, do you understand? Or what did you want to say about that?
Well, I think I understand. The pharaohs, after them, maybe raided the tomb.
Yes, exactly. So, one of the challenges of Egyptian archaeology, which is of no detailed interest to anybody here, but the experts in Egyptian history have had many, many headaches trying to figure out what is what in Egyptian history. And one of the reasons why they have so many headaches is if you happen to get into a tomb, and there have been some that have been discovered in modern times, Okay, you have to get in one, or you go to a temple, or you go to anything, you find anything in Egyptian history, in Egyptian archaeology. Okay, you find anything in it. It's going to be hard to figure it out because the pharaohs stole from each other. So one pharaoh, 100 years after his great-great-grandfather had his tomb made, would tell his warriors or whoever, right, the people of his time, to go into the tomb and get all the stuff out of there. Because, well, a whole bunch of amazing things were there. Gold and jewels and all kinds of valuables, very impressive objects that were very rare and hard to get in the first place. And so if all of them ended up underground in the tombs of pharaohs, how much of that stuff was going to be left in Egypt? Right, you have to mine gold, you have to find the jewels or what have you, but you're going to run out if you're going to give all of it, right? All of the stuff that you're finding or getting, if you're putting it in holes in the ground. And so if you want to be a pharaoh who's got a really fantastic temple or a really fantastic tomb, where are you going to get the stuff to put in it? As it turns out, the solution to that problem by pharaohs, who obviously didn't take even their own, you know, their own job as a pharaoh seriously, was to go to the tombs of other pharaohs and take the stuff out and use it for their tomb or use it in their temple. So this is what creates the headache for Egyptian archaeologists, is all of the stuff is mixed up. They will find stuff in one place that belonged to one pharaoh, but it's mixed up with stuff that belonged to a pharaoh from another time before that. And the story is very hard to sort out. So they have all kinds of arguments about what happened when and who did it and all kinds of stuff. In fact, the archaeologists and historians don't even really agree who made the Nile Red Sea Canal. They're quite sure that somebody made one. Because if we look over at Egyptian geography, and here we go back to this, you know, satellite map of Egypt. Let's see if I can get even more of a zoom. Oops, I lost it here. I lost it. I wanted it to be bigger and I ended up losing it. I hope you guys can see this, which is really interesting, right? This is the Nile River flowing to the Mediterranean, and then it fans out, and you have multiple channels of the river, right? And so that's why we have that in our geography map. But over here is something kind of interesting. Over here, I'm going to use a bright blue. This straight line right here. Oh, WebEx annotations leave a lot to be desired. So over here, this straight line that you see right here, right now, can you see it reinforced there in bright blue? Now I'm going to remove it so you can see it without the bright blue. Okay, this straight line here is called the Suez Canal, and it leads to a natural lake, which then kind of flows over here as well. And all of this is modern, kind of man-made. But what historians have found is that this channel over here doesn't really belong there. So they're pretty sure that that's the one that the pharaohs made. That was the one from ancient Egyptian times, see, connecting the Nile over to this lake, then permitting the navigation on the water all the way through to the Red Sea. So that was the easiest thing that they could do. Now, that's just cool because that's the Nile Red Sea Canal. It's a neat project that they did. But part of the story here is that nobody knows really who did it. And you would think that a pharaoh who did something so amazing would brag about it. Right? Because remember, what is the Rosetta Stone? Remember what the Rosetta Stone is and why it's kind of, you know, this important anchor fact of history, Rosetta?
Because the translation is basically a pharaoh saying he's so good.
Yeah, right. This is what kings, pharaohs, and all these ancient emperors and people like that did, is they tried to be glorious. They tried to do things to impress other people, and then they announced it really loudly to the whole world, and they made temples and monuments to themselves to tell everybody, I'm the greatest. Right? And so if we have the Rosetta Stone and we have other temples and artifacts and stuff that celebrate this or that pharaoh, and we'll see another example of that probably on Monday, another pharaoh's celebration of himself, right? How come we don't have a clear picture of so many of these important things? Well, it's because pharaohs even stole each other's reputation. They didn't just steal each other's artifacts. They stole each other's reputation. So in other words, one pharaoh would do something, perhaps make, you know, the Nile Red Sea Canal. And then a couple generations later, the next pharaoh would have the record keepers of Egypt write down that he was the one who did it. So who's to know? Right. So anyway, the reason why this is important to talk about here is because, well, we've arrived at a phase of Egyptian history after the age of the pyramids. Okay. Which is just the core story of Egypt. After that, we get into a part of Egyptian history, which is just really, quite frankly, not very interesting. The Egyptians are not up to much. This is the kind of people that they are. They did this impressive thing, but then they kind of gave up on it. And after that, well, there's not much to fill the story. I could sure tell you. We could bring up the story of this or that pharaoh. And, you know, there are little stories here and there that might interest you. And you know what? If you want to go ahead and read about them, there can sometimes be interesting stories. Such as, there was a female pharaoh at one point named Hatshepsut. And she's an interesting character, because how did there come to be a female pharaoh? All the pharaohs were male. And so on. There are, every once in a while, there's a little intriguing little episode in the story. But basically, the really interesting part of Egypt came to an end when the age of pyramids ended. Because the pyramids were the thing that the Egyptians did that are really so fascinating about them to this day. So then, what more do we have to say about the Egyptians? Well, we come into a phase here, after the Age of Pyramids, where the main thing that is happening in Egyptian history is the Egyptians are bumping up against other people. In other words, they're starting to get into more and more contact with their neighbors. So yesterday, for instance, I showed you guys that there were two areas on the map that were conquered by Egypt. So we have down here Nubia. And let me try to put a little rectangle around it. There we go. Okay. Nubia to the south. And then we also have up here the prehistoric or kind of biblical land of Israel as well was conquered by Egypt around 1800. So Nubia and Israel were both conquered. Good idea for you to go back to your geography maps if you need it. I can't remember. I think Israel was featured in geography map week 2 or 3 or something like that, right? So go back and see if you can learn this geography to get more familiar with it. But basically, they started to get more well known by their neighbors. And as long as Egypt was stronger than its neighbors, well, okay, that's all fine and good. But as it turns out, somebody came along that was stronger than the Egyptians, and we don't know who they were. A very mysterious people invaded Egypt around 1600, and they were called the Hyksos. So, did they come this way? I don't know for sure. Who knows? Maybe they came this way. I don't know, up the Red Sea, or maybe they came across the desert, or maybe they came across the desert this way. I don't know, because the picture is simply not clear. But the people who came were called the Hyksos, and they conquered Lower Egypt. So Egypt was again split apart into two halves. There were Egyptian pharaohs in Upper Egypt, and there were Hyksos kings in Lower Egypt. And this started to become a pattern in Egyptian history. The pattern begins with a character like Menes-Narmer. He unifies. And you have a while in which things are going on. And then the pattern ends with a pharaoh that loses control or something else that happens, and Egypt breaks apart again. And then the pattern begins again with a new pharaoh that puts it back together again. Mentuhotep II was that, the first one. And then the Hyksos come and they break it apart again. And, well, guess what's coming next? Another Egyptian king is finally going to succeed in putting things back together again. And you're going to have a little bit more of Egyptian life. And then, well, guess what? It's going to fall apart again. So we end up with a pattern, a historical pattern called cycles. Right? So ancient history, archaic history, is always characterized by cycles. In other words, it kind of goes like this. Right? It kind of looks like this. Things get better for a while, then they go back to the way they were, and then they get better for a while, and they go back to bad, being bad again, and they get okay again, and then they get bad again, right? So it kind of looks like this. It's the cycles of history. The rise and the fall, the rise and the fall, the rise and the fall of a kingdom, what have you, right? And this is what Egyptian history looks like. So it pretty much loses its interest, because if I were to teach you 3,000 years of rise and fall, rise and fall, pretty soon you guys are going to be asleep over there. I mean, this is going to be a pretty great way to get to sleep, in fact, rather than to learn anything interesting about the world that we live in. So we are actually going to, you know, not spend an awful lot of time on this Egyptian history, except for the fact that in modern times, something really exciting happened to make Egyptian history a little bit more interesting again. Something happened that made Egyptian history a little bit more exciting again, and you may have spotted it in the corner over here. There was an amazing discovery. Does anybody know what this is? Patrick?
The tomb of King Tut.
Okay, it's not the tomb, but you're right that it's a part of the tomb. What is this? Does anybody know specifically what this is?
A statue?
It looks like a statue. Very, very, very nearly. It looks like a statue, but it's not quite a statue. Anybody know specifically what it is?
A sarcophagus?
Yes, it's part of a sarcophagus, but, Julia?
It's the head part?
Yes, called the death mask. This was over the mummy of King Tut as part of a multi-layered sarcophagus. And this just exquisite piece with gold and everything, right? It's just quite amazing, was intact. And it was discovered in 1922. So this is an amazing part of Egyptian history, because remember what happened? The pharaohs built their tombs and they were raided. And then they started to hide their tombs. I mean, this is not exactly hiding, right? But in fact, they did start to really hide them. I'm going to go here to Wikipedia, I think. We have the story of King Tutankhamun on Wikipedia. Let me see if I can bring up a picture. Oh my goodness, there is the skeleton of the mummy. So if you go to Wikipedia, you can see some pretty amazing stuff. What I wanted to show you was this thing here, the discovery, here we go, by a man named Howard Carter. The man who discovered the tomb in 1922, he was an English archaeologist named Howard Carter. And he found it, if I can scroll down here, in a place called the Valley of the Kings. Now look at this, even compared to the other thing that we know about, right? Even compared to the tomb of Montuhotep. We really are at a whole other phase here, right? All of these entrances here, I mean, that's as much as you can see of the tombs. Even when they were built, this is as much as ever showed. And this Valley of the Kings is hidden way up in Upper Egypt because nobody's supposed to find it. And as it turns out, all of this was covered over and it just looked like a bunch of hills. And it was very hard to figure out where the tombs were, and it took a long time for Egyptologists to dig these holes and to find that there were tombs. So in 1922, Howard Carter actually opened up the tomb of King Tut for the first time in history. Talk about an exciting moment in archaeology. So we get to a strange kind of event, and that is that we have later on, all the way in 1922, we get a whole new anchor fact. We get a whole new exciting discovery that says, hey, look, here's another amazing thing about the Egyptians. Right? Because if we're studying Egyptian history and we get to the pyramids and then we get to the kind of dreary part where the Egyptians aren't doing anything interesting, oh, wow, it's pretty much getting really, really boring. But then all of a sudden, bam, this shows up. Right? And when that shows up, well, of course, people are interested in again. What is the story of King Tut? What can we learn about him and so on, right? We have a new desire to find out more about this Egyptian culture. So there's kind of a new excitement. So on Monday, we'll talk about the amazing story of King Tut. As it turns out, he's part of a chapter of Egyptian history, which is interesting all over again. It's not a time when the pharaohs have basically given up on Egyptian religion and have given up on anything serious that Egypt used to be about. In fact, King Tut's father was very serious about Egyptian religion, as we will learn. His name was Akhenaten, and he tried to change Egyptian religion and make it serious again. So we will see that the story of King Tut is connected to an attempt by one of the pharaohs, his father, to revive the spirit of Egypt. As it turns out, the attempt failed. And soon, the only interesting thing we're going to have to say about Egypt is who else is conquering it. But at least we have another kind of fascinating chapter of Egyptian history having to do with King Tut. So on Monday, I'll tell you the story of King Tut, his father Akhenaten, and this important chapter of Egyptian history. And that'll be it for the Egyptians. After that, what we're going to talk about is who were they fighting? Because the people they were fighting turns out that they're more interesting than the Egyptians themselves. And eventually, they're just going to conquer the Egyptians over and over again until there really isn't much to say about Egypt anymore. So that's all we're going to have to say. Okay. Well, at least this part's going to be exciting about King Tut. All right, so that comes on Monday. Of course, tomorrow is History Through Art. So, thanks everybody. I look forward to that. Talk to you tomorrow.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Mr. Powell.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.